Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network's Eat Your Words, and I'm your host, Kathy Irway. So it's, you know, a lot of times around this time of the year, folks are making their New Year's resolutions if they haven't given up just yet and trying to plow through. A lot of that has to do with diet and nutrition. Who doesn't want to eat a little bit better each year, start off the new year right? So I've got a great book in front of me. If I had to sort of summarize a lot of the health tips, nutrition, buzzwords that are going around, one word that I've seen come up a lot is the word bowl, the concept of putting a lot of really healthy stuff together in a colorful mixture in a bowl. And it's very flexible, easy to make. So this book I'm holding right now is called The Whole Bowl, Gluten-Free, Dairy-Free Soups and Stews. And it's a beautiful cookbook, and it's written by Rebecca Wood and co-writer Lita Scheintaub. Lita, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks so much for joining.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, Lita, you've also written about cultured foods, that's fermented foods, for the home kitchen.
Right.
And you've been a chef and teacher at the Natural Gourmet Institute.
Actually, I haven't been a teacher there. I studied there.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. So you trained there.
Right.
So this is a really exciting book, and you're based in Brattleboro, Vermont. Is that correct?
Right. I was born and raised in New York, and I moved to Brattleboro 5 years ago. That's where I'm based.
That's a cool city. I had the pleasure of passing through there once. So I love the cookbook. It's so practical, so healthy, and I find it's so easy to make just for any level of cooks. But why do you think that, you know, the concept of making a soup or a stew, I think that a lot of people have a misperception that it's very difficult or it's time consuming to make. In a lot of these recipes, it's like simmer for 5 minutes and taste for salt and then you're done. So I wonder how that came about. Do you have any idea?
I'm not really sure how that came about because maybe it might have something to do with folks not really trusting their cooking intuition these days. I mean, some people do and some people don't. It requires a bit of just being comfortable in the kitchen. I mean, you can follow
improvise.
A recipe and have a great soup and great stew, but to the concept of a soup, to me, is something that you put together sort of from your heart. You have something, you start with a great broth, and that, for me, that is what makes a great soup. And you really can't go wrong if you start with a great broth.
Right. And it sounds is it a little more open-ended then? Like you can, it's not like a strict set of rules?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I write cookbooks and I love sharing my recipes, and a lot of people feel most comfortable following a recipe, and that's great. And then once you get comfortable with recipes, you can kind of branch out on your own and create variations. But I think the difference between using no stock or a weak stock and using a really strong stock is really what makes the soup. So when people feel like they don't make a good soup, I think it's all about the base that they're using. And we provide three different bases for soups for all the recipes in the book, a bone stock and a vegetarian stock and a kombu shiitake stock for the more Asian style soups.
But, so those are like the basics, and then you can make all sorts of things from these.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you asked that question off the bat. It brings up a story that my friend Sharon was making a soup that she followed. This was several years ago, and she followed the recipe exactly, and it tasted terrible. Ooh. And she couldn't figure out why, and so we went through all the ingredients together, and what we figured out was she used stock from a box, and even though it was organic,
right,
and it was all that, it just didn't have that kind of depth, and it actually ruined the soup. And I mean, it's a little bit of a strong statement to make, but
and you'd actually paid money for that.
Yeah,
I mean, you'd think that you would get like a better product for that, but actually, you're saying, and this book is really seeming to say that knowing these basics of stock is like everything in cooking.
I feel like it is, and mm-hmm. a lot of times we have stock going just about all the time because I have a slow cooker and I just throw in bones and keep making stock over and over again. And my husband and I will, when we're thinking of what we're going to eat, we might take out some of the stock, and if we have maybe some leftover pork from a roast, we'll shred that pork, put it in the soup. We might add some fish sauce and lime juice because we love Thai-style flavors, and add some mint, cilantro, whatever vegetables we have on hand, and some kind of starch, like we like rice noodles or any kind of starch you could use, or mm-hmm. skip the starch. And then you have a meal, and it's a little bit different every time.
Right, because you're adding all these different things that you might have, like the pork or leftover something.
Right.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun, too. So you've written about cultured foods. What got you inspired, and what do you think is like the main message of this book that you're trying to get? Yeah, the whole bowl.
The main message is that you can create delicious soups and stews without using gluten and dairy. I mean, that's the theme of the book. Mm-hmm. And foods that are really healing. And my collaboration with Rebecca Wood draws on her many years of being what I call a Whole Foods pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote the Whole Foods Encyclopedia that's been in print for over 30 years. And she knows so much about the medicinal properties of food and a lot of the sidebars that she's written are about what the foods can do for you, and just really on a deep level, like the energetic properties of
like
food.
Like how to digest certain mm-hmm. foods better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it I feel really lucky to have collaborated with Rebecca, because this is the first book that she's done in quite some time, and she's really been in the forefront of a lot of different areas in the natural foods world. She was the first to write about quinoa in this country. She wrote a book called Quinoa, the Supergrain, quite a while back. And she was talking about trans fats and high fructose corn syrup before most people had heard of it. And so whenever a trend starts, I mean, she's really been doing it.
Yeah. So
long before.
And that's what I could sort of tell from all of these recipes. They look very simple, but I think, you know, each ingredient of them seems to play a very important part. They look very thought out, like well researched, and just comes from a lot of wisdom about food in general, and also very worldly cultures thrown in there. This book really takes you on a tour of like the world. I was wondering, did you guys just travel a lot, or do you just have in your pocket, you know, it sounds from your anecdote that you like to make a little Thai sometimes, just every day, and then, you know, what else is there? Preserved lemon.
Right. Yeah. We both have a strong Asian style influence. And it's not so much from traveling. Part of it for me comes from marrying an Indian man
mm-hmm.
who I have several Indian style recipes in here. So Indian food is a big part of my life. And just a shared love for Asian flavors, and we just think they make everything taste good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. there's so much you can do with just vegetables that you've shown in this book, which is really exciting because, I mean, soups and stews to a lot of people mean heavy, you know, cream-based or meat-based. And yes, you know, you have meat in this book. It's not all about, like, you know, vegan or vegetarian, but it's really complementing a lot of these flavors that you've thrown in, like ginger and herbs. It's really a very, I guess, colorful look at throwing food together. You know, I'm inspired by something as humble as soup, stew, and like a whole grain bowl with an assortment of vegetables around it, because it is so healthy and yet it is so, I guess, like unpopular these days. And I find that maybe like people on the go just aren't prepared to put something together in a bowl. And a lot of our, you know, the American dinnerware says it all. Like, we have a cereal bowl, this tiny thing, and we have a big plate. But there's no, like, I mean, unless you have those nice fancy pasta bowls or rim soup bowls, which is not like, sort of everyone, something that everyone has. It's hard to think of something like these recipes as a meal in traditional, at least nowadays, it seems.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, some of them definitely are dedicated kind of starters, but a lot of them are meals or can be bumped up into a meal with addition of a grain or some sort of more filling ingredient. But yeah, I'd like to see that come back into popularity because it's such an easy, nourishing way to create meals.
Right, rather than like, you know, a handheld sandwich on the go. It's just tends to not be able, unless it's like the really messy sandwich that you really don't want to carry on the go.
Yeah.
It's difficult to pack as much nutrition as you have in this soup and stew formula.
Yeah. Even the rise in popularity of bone broth recently, like the way you were describing,
like in ramen
that,
shops.
This sort of fits in well with it because, like, the broth is in to-go cups, in paper to-go cups. Like, it's, even that, you're not, I love that people are doing that, that that's being made available, and it's a great alternative to coffee and juices.
Right.
But even that is, like, on the go.
Now, what is it exactly about soup that helps you kind of, I know it's, like, infused with all these nutrients that you put in it from other ingredients, but doesn't it help you, like, absorb those vitamins better than just kind of chomping on each ingredient? Is that
it
correct?
Is, yeah, it is more digestible if the if a soup is cooked well and or if it's blended. Those are definitely more digestible ways of eating food, and especially if your energy is low.
And because it's warm, does that help too? Or
I mean, it depends on what kind of school you subscribe to, I would say so. And Rebecca has really she's in the school of really favoring cooked foods and warming foods to keep our adrenals healthy and to pass on a lot of the raw foods, and especially in the winter time.
Yeah, there's some science behind that, right? It'll be more quickly absorbed too.
Yeah, maybe.
Like tea, you know, you drink tea and it's, you immediately feel soothing. Feeling. So
yeah.
I love how you wrote here that bean soup is more of a universal image of nurture than a loaf of bread. And then it goes on to provide some tips about making bean soups. But that really struck me as a true statement. And in this country, even, you know, we had all sorts of bean stews, pork and beans, baked beans, that's a sort of stewy thing. Of course, you know, there's black bean soups, navy bean soups. And beans, you know, are very filling. They have carbs, they have protein, they're cheap. But again, it's that, you know, it's seems a little impractical to make. But why more nutritious than a loaf of bread? Because I'm also thinking bread is difficult to make, but nobody really makes it, you know, at home. But why is it so much better for you than bread?
Well, beans, you're getting protein. You're getting more substance. You can have a meal around beans and add some vegetables, and you have a meal there. And a loaf of bread is basically generally wheat, and unfortunately, most people are not, or a lot of people are not digesting wheat very well these days because of what's happening with our food system, degradation of the food system, and it's just, I can feel that directly. If I were to eat a piece of bread as opposed to a bowl of beans, yeah, just with a little olive oil and some sea salt on top, like, if you just picture yourself eating the two of them, like, which really would feel more nurturing? Kind of, Rebecca would say, use your felt sense to discern which would be more,
like, how you would feel afterwards and stuff too.
How you would be nurtured.
There is something, like, very comforting about that image of, like, a steaming bowl of beans, too. And it's so humble and so, you know, rustic. But, yes, it does sound, like, super soothing and fill you up, satisfying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to cut to a quick little commercial intro, and we'll be right back chatting more.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow, with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point of origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, Northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
All right, we're back chatting more with Lita Scheintaub. She's one of the authors of The Whole Bowl, Gluten-Free, Dairy-Free Soups and Stews. So, Lita, I was wondering, you know, going through this, knowing a little bit more about your background and your husband's background and your taste for Indian and Asian foods, I'm wondering if you helped contribute to a recipe that I find very interesting called pepper water with beef?
Yes.
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah. That's my husband, actually.
Okay.
He's responsible for that recipe. And, yeah, that's a typical Anglo-Indian recipe. And my husband is Anglo-Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite...
It's also known as rasam, is that correct? Rasam?
I'm sorry?
It's also known as rasam, this recipe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Go on, sorry.
I have to say that is... probably the most time-consuming, complicated recipe of the book.
I mean,
it's not terribly complicated, but it is quite multi-stepped, and I love watching Nash make it because he's just there's just a lot of things going on in the kitchen, and it's fun to watch.
I bet it smells good.
All the spices going around, and so the
pepper water.
Yeah, it's a fun soup to eat because, as I wrote in the head note, it's a soup, but you serve it on a plate and you eat it with your fingers. So
what?
You make this you make a broth, a very strong, flavorful broth that you can base. You can base it on water, or even better, on a bone broth.
Mm-hmm.
And And you add a lot of pepper and
like
other seasonings.
Black pepper corns?
Black pepper, yeah.
Okay.
This one's black pepper. Normally, there's cayenne pepper also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a lot of ginger. And Nash's mother says that she'll always make it when she feels she's coming down with something. That's something
okay.
you really want to turn to.
Right.
Yeah. And it just has so many flavors going on in it. And we cook beef separately, and that is added to the finished soup. And you don't have to, though. It could also be just served as a brothy soup. And
okay.
then you pour it over cooked rice, and then you dig in with your hands.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
You said it was a lot of things, but, you know, for most, I mean, anyone who's cooked a few Indian mm-hmm. dishes, they're familiar. You know, they got mustard seeds, cumin seeds, mm-hmm. ginger and garlic. So, yeah, that looks like something you could whip up for a cold day, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one thing that people tend to be intimidated by with Indian recipes is the long list of ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a pantry set up with a bunch of spices, like the spices that are in this recipe, cumin, black mustard seeds, coriander, and turmeric, and a bunch of others, then it really makes the recipes so much less intimidating, and
yeah,
the technique is not all that difficult.
Yeah, I have a very sort of haphazard way of doing that with my spice cabinet, too, of just sort of sectioning off these whole spices like coriander seeds. But yeah, it's very handy. All right, so going on with more, I guess, cold weather or, you know, soups to make you feel better, you have a soup called Cold Quell Soup, and it's supposed to help move your energy. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of Rebecca's soups that I mentioned. She really
help your chi.
Yeah, she has studied Chinese medicine, and she recommends this one for a cold that mm-hmm. it supports chi and blood circulation.
With ginger, mustard greens too. With the spiciness of them, I never thought of that before. But yeah, that I can see how that could be very circulating, supportive.
Yeah, and this is one of the simpler soups, too, and it'll just make you feel better.
Right, it's just sort of mustard greens, you got some carrots, but the ginger in there, I bet, gives it a lot of kick.
Yeah, yeah, and the yam is comforting. And it's just an example of one of the recipes of using very simple ingredients,
very simple.
But in different ways that you might not have thought of before.
Yeah. So have you studied also a little bit of Chinese traditional medicine or Ayurvedic? Is that
no, I haven't. Mm-hmm. I've just been exposed to through Rebecca and just reading here and there, but not anything that I've retained all that much, just bits and pieces
right.
that I've learned from
you're,
Rebecca.
You're describing yang there, so it sounded like you have a pretty good grasp. and I love some of these traditional, you know, American soups and stews. Like you've got nettle soup with the poached eggs. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's American. It seems like because it's a common weed, right? Like a backyard
yeah.
weed. And then you also have this great recipe that I've never heard of. It's a dish called slum gulyan.
Right.
I don't know
that
if
one is Rebecca's. She put that one together. Also, when I first heard of that one, I thought that it was from an Asian country and very exotic, and
right.
turns out to be Irish American too.
How did it get that name, Slum?
I don't know actually,
but it looks very kid friendly. It's sort of like a macaroni bowl, any kind of pasta actually you want, and a little bit of a ground meat, a ground beef in this case.
Yeah.
Very comforting. Very, very
yeah,
wintry.
I think it's kind of a version of something some of us might have grown up with that you get out of a can, but it's like it's been made into something much more delicious.
I see.
I mean, I didn't grow up
one.
Eating out of a can, but if you know what I mean, like the ground meat and noodles, and it's just so simple, but Chef you're Boyardee, using really high-level ingredients, and you're adding fresh mushrooms and adding dulse flakes for flavor and for nutrition, and it's just
super cozy. That's a good everyday sort of dinner.
Yeah. I think even kids would like this.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. The cover recipe was something that really intrigued me because it's this beautiful sort of broth with a lot of green herbs in it. There looks to be some scallions in it, and then there's a lemon slice floating on top. But I found the recipe. It is called May Day Stew. What is the concept behind that? Is it a May Day sort of ritual or just like a spring sort of stew?
Just a spring sort of stew, and we just like that name because it coincides with the seasonality of those vegetables, but you could use it with other vegetables too. Yeah, it's a very uplifting soup / stew that you cook the vegetables in. You kind of sort of make a broth as you're going along, and you bring water to a boil, and you add each vegetable individually, and you cook it until it's crisp tender, and then you take it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then and you keep adding them to a bowl, and when they're all done, the soup / stew is done, and then you use that.
The broth.
Cooking broth as the broth.
That is so smart. I noticed you have all kinds of green vegetables here, like broccolini and asparagus, you know, very spring-like. In the spring when asparagus are in season, a common way to cook them would be to blanch them and shock them in ice water.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that blanching water turns a vibrant green.
Yeah.
And then I feel personally very... very badly when I pour it out down the drain.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of like this. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to pour it down the drain.
And that's what this recipe is really all about. So you blanch, you know, other things like little Hokkaido turnips, maybe fennel, carrots, all kinds of cauliflower. And then with that kind of leftover blanching liquid from all of it, it becomes the soup broth. I mean, it's so simple.
Yeah, and you can take this concept and use it in any way. Like if you're just making the asparagus and you have that beautiful blanching liquid, you can just pour it into a mug and season it a little and drink it.
Sort of like asparagus tea we could all have. Actually, it doesn't even taste bad, too. I mean, just when it's slightly, you know, when a vegetable has slightly infused water and you really don't need that much.
Yeah, potlucker.
All right. So anything you're cooking this weekend you can divulge?
I'm testing some recipes, actually, for a book called Decolonize Your Diet.
Decolonize.
I'm sure they wouldn't mind me mentioning that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I have to look up their full names.
Okay, so you're recipe testing for a new cookbook?
Yeah, they're... really great recipes, just a handful of recipes that they want to make sure are in top form before they go out, a few baking recipes. And I made a calendula cornbread this morning, which was delicious.
Mm.
And I'm making
calendula, so that's like an herb or flower?
Yeah, it's a flower. And I've never cooked with it before. It has a little, like, tart, astringent taste.
Okay.
A different kind of flavor. It's kind of subtle.
And cornbread. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and I'm candying pumpkin.
Oh wow! So like little strips, like a
they're big pieces of pumpkin.
Oh,
and so we'll see in a couple of days.
I've never heard of that. That sounds. Both of those things sound really exciting. Is there any favorite piece of, you know, like any tip you can give us about trying to eat better for this year?
Well, I would say, at the risk of sounding really trendy, to start a bone broth habit.
Okay.
And get a slow cooker.
Okay.
Because, I mean, most people in New York or whoever, anywhere really, are going to be going out to a job and can't sit by the stove all day and watch your bones cook in
Yeah,
stock.
It takes a long time, too. You don't want to, like,
yeah.
Stick, yeah, so, stay at home all day while that's happening.
Right. Yeah, I get to do that, but not everybody does.
What kind of bones, Tala?
Sorry?
What kind of bones?
What sort of
get?
Bones?
Yeah, like...
Oh, any bones that you like. If it's fish bones, that's a quick stock. That's a 45-minute mm-hmm. kind of stock. But other than that, you can use chicken bones, pork bones, beef bones, lamb bones. And I save them up as I have a meal, and I put them in the freezer. And once I have enough, like I have 3 pounds worth or so, and I put them into the slow cooker, add water, add a splash of vinegar, and... Oh. Some seasonings, maybe some kombu seaweed, mm-hmm. and cook it for 12 to 24 hours. And I use that, I drink it out of teacups, and I use it as a base for all of my soups and stews and mm-hmm. and other dishes. And I think that would be a great way to start the new year. I've convinced a few friends to do it, and they've been really happy about it. And it just elevates your cooking, and mm-hmm. it makes you feel good.
And I bet it's super nourishing, too. You get, like,
yeah,
that bone,
it's super nourishing.
Wow. Yeah. Perfect for winter. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for your tips, and love the new book. Everyone check out The Whole Bowl by Rebecca Wood and Lita Scheintaub, and hope to keep posted on other books you're working on to come.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Lita, and thanks everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.